Nick was only as messy as he needed to be in his Melbrook room. He preferred a meticulously tidy living space. However, such things would draw too much attention in a college freshman, especially when he had roommates keen on stopping by.
"Oh yeah, you, Vince, and I were supposed to be the Parentless Lonely Hearts Club this weekend," Alice said. "Sorry I kind of bailed on that."
"You had family come in. If that was a viable option for either of us, we'd easily do the same," Nick assured her. "We'll just have to find a way to soldier on without you."
"Uh-huh. Don't do anything too mean to Vince," Alice cautioned him.
"Perish the thought. I was planning on driving him out to have a nice, relaxing dinner off campus, away from the hustle and bustle of those with visiting parents," Nick told her. Alice raised an eyebrow. "At a strip club," Nick finished with a smirk.
"I'm pretty sure Sasha would punch you if she found out you tricked Vince into going to a strip club. Not like I punch, either. She'd aim right for the dick."
Nick winced visibly. "I hadn't thought of that part. I don't know why she'd react that way, though. It's not like she has anything to worry about. I mean, have you ever known a guy less likely to cheat on anyone or at anything than Vince?"
"True, but feelings aren't always so logical," Alice said. "Sometimes people overreact when the person they care about is ogling tramps."
"I prefer to think of them less as tramps and more as ambitious young ladies paying their way through nursing school," Nick said.
"The nearest nursing school is 50 miles from here," Alice pointed out.
"So they commute. All the more reason to work extra hard. For the gas money."
Alice briefly considered throwing a shoe at him. She stopped herself, though, realizing that wouldn't send the right kind of message. She needed to be calm and rational in her approach to chastising Nick for this type of behavior. She threw all 4 shoes instead. It was immensely satisfying. Mr. Transport stepped through the front door and into the small hallway of the Melbrook foyer. He usually teleported back to his and Mr. Numbers' apartment. However, from time to time, it made sense to do an in-person walkthrough. It was a gentle reminder to the students that, though they may not be visible, there were authority figures on hand at any given time. Given that it was Thursday night, which was practically a Friday for all college-based purposes, he expected to walk into the common room and find all the students hatching some sort of night-occupying scheme. What greeted his eyes as he passed from the hallway was significantly less jubilant. Only Vince was there, reading some chemistry book on the couch.
"Good evening, Vince," Mr. Transport greeted.
"Hi, Mr. Transport," Vince said, looking up with a smile. "How's your night going?"
"Very well. And yours?"
"Not bad. Just a few problems left, and I'm done for the night."
"Commendable. Vince, I can't help but wonder where the others are. Some sort of mischief I should be concerned about?" Mr. Transport asked.
Vince laughed. "Nah, nothing that I know of, sir. Everyone is kind of gearing up for Parents' Weekend. Herschel and Mary are both in their rooms cleaning, and Nick went with Alice to shop for some new outfit. Turns out her dad is coming in, and they're going somewhere nice."
"That seems enjoyable," Mr. Transport said, carefully gliding over anything that could be construed as a question as to why Vince's activities weren't in the same vein. Mr. Transport was already quite informed on that answer, and tactful enough not to bring it up.
"I hope so," Vince replied. "I don't get the feeling Alice sees a whole lot of her dad. She's trying to downplay it, but she seems excited."
"I'm sure it will be fine," Mr. Transport assured him.
At the mention of Nick, Mr. Transport recalled that he didn't possess any family likely to visit either.
I assume you and Nick will be up to some merrymaking of your own tomorrow night.
He mentioned something about dinner off campus, which seemed like a nice change-up, Vince said. Say what you want about Nick. He knows how to have fun.
That he does, Mr. Transport said, feeling a bit relieved. He'd grown a bit fond of Vince and didn't like the idea of the boy stuck alone, surrounded by people with loving families.
Well, I'll leave you to your studies. Have a good night, Vince.
You too, Mr. Transport. See you tomorrow when we go to class. Mr. Transport walked through the common room and into the kitchen. Once there, he made the quick teleportation into the apartment tucked away behind the steel door by the stove.
You're late, Mr. Numbers chastised him. You know we have some reports to make tomorrow.
I stopped to talk with a student, Mr. Transport said defensively.
That's less of an excuse than you might believe it to be, and more of an explanation on how you wasted the time that made you late, Mr. Numbers snapped.
He was often on edge before reports were due, which, given the possible circumstances of a bad one, was not an inexcusable crime.
I'll remind you of that next time Mary challenges you to a game of chess, Mr. Transport said, joining him at the table where papers were already spread out.
The chess is different, Mr. Numbers replied. That is education.
I'm sure, Mr. Transport said. Shall we debate this more, or simply acknowledge that I'm here and it's time to get to work?
Work, Mr. Numbers said sharply.
Then work it is, Mr. Transport agreed, concealing something of a grin behind a fit of fake coughing.
92.
Herschel!
Yelled an enthusiastic, middle-aged voice.
Hi, Mom,
Herschel said, embarrassment welling up as his mother gave him a tremendous embrace. The Melbrook students were gathered in the common room, relaxing after gym on Friday. In honor of the weekend's occasion, the dorm's front steel door had been deactivated, allowing visitors to enter as they pleased. It was a nice way around reminding the parents that their children had been experimented on and were still under careful watch. Plus, it saved anyone from having to get up to welcome people. Herschel's mother had been the first to arrive, so the remainder of the students got up from their chairs to greet her. All of them were there, though Nick and Vince were present purely to meet the makers of their dorm mates.
"These must be your friends I've heard so much about," Mrs. Daniels said after she had thoroughly squeezed Herschel. "I feel like I know them already. The one with the silver hair must be Vince."
"Nice to meet you, Mrs. Daniels," Vince said.
"Good to meet you, too. And I see the other boy is wearing sunglasses indoors and is curiously well-dressed, so that would be Nick."
"Bingo," Nick affirmed. He'd gussied himself up a bit in honor of the night to come. He liked to make the right kind of impression on the ladies of the evening.
"Which leaves these two lovely young ladies as Mary and Alice,"
Mrs. Daniels concluded.
"Correct," Alice said. "I'm Alice, and this is Mary. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Daniels. We greatly enjoy our friendship with Herschel."
"Ditto,"
Mary agreed, somewhat shyly.
"Well, you are such a polite bunch," Mrs. Daniels said. "I'm glad to see Herschel has made such nice friends."
She turned back to her son.
"All right, let's go see your room, and then we can go out to dinner."
"Sounds great," Herschel said,
relieved his mother didn't want to dally too much with the others. He loved his mother very dearly, but there were certain times in a boy's life when a maternal presence is one of pure, unbridled embarrassment.
Being around a girl you're trying to work up the nerve to ask out was definitely one of those times. Herschel took his mother by the hand and walked her into the boys' lounge, the steel door whooshing shut behind them. She seemed pleasant, Vince observed once they had gone.
Yeah, makes you wonder what kind of nut job the dad must be to have produced a kid like Roy, Nick added.
Nick felt something kick him sharply in the shin. He glanced down, immediately suspecting Alice, only to see nothing there. On a hunch, he glanced over at Mary. The look in her eyes left no room to wonder about the nature of his invisible assailant. Before he had a chance to react, though, Mary's focus shifted abruptly.
"Oh, my parents are here," she cried. "I'm heading out to meet them. See you guys later."
"Wait, we don't get to meet the folks that spawned our local wacky telepath? I feel gypped," Nick complained.
"It's nothing personal. They're just normal people, and they're not used to being around supers," Mary said, making her way to the door. "I need to get them a little adjusted first. I promise I'll bring them around once they can better handle themselves."
With that, she was out the door like a shot.
"I still sort of feel like we just got brushed off," Vince said.
"Either we did or they did, and I'm not about to go rooting around the psyche of a telepath trying to figure it out," Nick replied.
"Amen to that," Alice agreed.
There were no new arrivals immediately following Mary's departure, so the other three returned to lounging about. Well, Nick and Vince lounged. Alice sat carefully so as not to wrinkle or upset the outfit she had purchased. The effort was understandable. After all, the girl looked sleek. Her black dress was complemented by a mere whisper of pink trim, along with matching shoes and a handbag. She'd spent more time than she would ever admit on getting her makeup just right, which essentially meant making it look like she wasn't wearing any. Her long, platinum blonde hair was pulled up and styled, with a few key strands hanging down for effect. In short, she was the picture of adolescent elegance, just as she had been taught to be for many, many years.
"I gotta go take a whiz," Nick announced, hurling himself up from the chair.
"You are so amazingly crude,"
Alice sighed.
"That wasn't crude. Crude would be saying I need to go defile the porcelain," Nick countered.
"Touché,"
Alice said, not quite certain whether it was a win for Nick or a loss for everyone in the room. Nick didn't stick around to find out. He headed over to the boys' side and swept through the door. The next man to walk into the room was not a returning Nick with an empty bladder. It was, instead, a gentleman dressed simply yet spectacularly. He wore black slacks, a white shirt open at the throat, and a black jacket. A simple pair of cufflinks and a watch were all the accessory added to his ensemble. It was a classic look, yet not an impressive one. Unless, of course, one was aware of how much each piece of the outfit cost. At that point, he was a picture of splendor and decadence.
"Good evening," said the tall, suited man.
"Hi, Daddy,"
Alice said, extracting herself carefully from her chair. It was a difficult task, not only because of the dress, but because of the wave of excitement that crashed against her. She and her father didn't see each other all that often, and this was the first time she could ever remember him making a trip specifically to spend time with her. "Hi, Mr. Adair," Vince said, pulling himself to his feet and sticking out his hand. "I'm Vince Reynolds."
"A pleasure to meet you, Vince,"
he said, pumping the hand once and immediately releasing it.
"I would love to stay and get to know you better, but unfortunately,
Alice and I are shorter on time than I'd intended.
Oh, no problem, Vince said. You guys have fun tonight.
We'll certainly try. Alice, are you ready?
Ready,
Alice chimed off brightly.
Then let us make some haste,
he said, flashing Vince a million-dollar smile. It seemed just a touch familiar to Vince, but it quickly slipped out of his mind. And just like that, Vince was the only one left in the room. He sat back down and waited for Nick to finish his business so they could go eat. It was only a few seconds of waiting when Nick stepped back in from the boys' side.
What'd I miss?
Alice's dad, Vince told him.
Damn, I was looking forward to that one.
Nick lied.
Oh well, what's done is done. Food?
Sounds great, Vince agreed. He hopped to his feet and turned toward the door, just in time to see an unfamiliar man step through it. The man was dressed casually in jeans and a shirt. He was fit, without being intimidating, and average-looking in nearly every facet. Vince started to ask the man his business here, when Nick's voice came from behind to cut him off. It was filled with something odd in Nick's tone, something Vince wasn't certain he'd ever heard there before. Surprise.
Jerry?
93.
Wow, you got a big car just to be here for a day, Alice noted as she walked outside and saw the white stretch limousine.
A necessary evil, unfortunately,
her father said.
I'm confused, though. I thought you hated stretch limos. You said they were tacky, for people who wanted to look impressive but didn't know how,
Alice said.
And that belief still holds firmly true,
her father replied.
Though I'll thank you not to mention it around our guests tonight. The limo was to appeal to their tastes rather than my own.
What guests? I thought you flew in to see me,
Alice said, slowing down her trot to the car.
No, dear, I said I was going to be in town and invited you to dinner. I'm here to close a deal with Horatio Vinders for one of his offshoot companies. He insisted on coming into town this weekend to visit his daughter Beth, so I offered to take them out to dinner.
He explained, his gait never even considering an idea as indignant as slowing down. Alice scrambled to catch up. She wasn't sure how she was feeling right now, though she was certain it wasn't pleasant. All the same, she didn't want to be left behind entirely.
Mr. Adair,
called a young girl somewhat older than Alice. She had stepped out from behind the limo, clearly waiting for them. She had her hair trimmed short and wore a midnight blue dress paired with a few adornments of tasteful jewelry. She looked familiar, and Alice realized she had seen this girl many times before wandering the halls beneath the school. At that time, she'd been wearing a gray uniform, so that made her either a sophomore or a junior. Alice's guess was junior.
Beth,
Charles Adair said, leaning in and giving the girl a respectful kiss on the cheek.
You grow more beautiful every time I see you. Is your father already inside?
Oh, no, I'm so sorry, but he was caught up momentarily speaking with one of my professors. It was so embarrassing. She wouldn't stop going on and on about how wonderful a student I am. Father sent me ahead to let you know of his delay and to tell you that we certainly don't expect you to wait. You two go ahead to dinner and we'll catch up later.
Alice felt a bubble of joy rising in her. At least she would have a little time to talk with her dad, just the two of them. It wasn't what she had expected, but it was something.
Nonsense,
Charles Adair said, waving her off.
I wouldn't hear of such a thing, leaving you two to find your own way when I have this enormous vehicle just idling by. Don't even mention it again. Alice and I will wait right here with you until your father arrives.
Mr. Adair, you are so kind, Beth replied. And it was Alice, wasn't it? I think I've seen you around. It's a pleasure to meet you. The pleasure is all mine,
Alice said automatically. She'd been through so many formal greetings, it came like second nature to her now.
Beth's father tells me she's quite accomplished here at Lander,
Mr. Adair interjected.
A third year in the same program as yourself, Alice. You would do well to listen to any bits of wisdom she might pass down.
Alice choked herself back from snapping that she already knew what year Beth was just from paying attention below ground. Instead, she lowered her eyes and said,
I am always grateful for the guidance of my seniors.
Such an excellent attitude to have here at Lander, Beth said, flashing a toothy grin.
You'll find yourself going far with such humility.
Alice said nothing. She'd managed to forget what this was like. The subtle barbs, the plays for power, the dance of the wealthy debutantes. For that's what this was. Beth was from society, too. Her father had less wealth than Alice's, but since Mr. Adair was trying to impress them, it was simple enough for Beth to establish herself as the alpha between the two. It was a tactful duel of concealed attacks and hasty retreats, an art Alice had learned long ago. And now, standing here in the crisp air of a dying winter, she realized how much she loathed it to her very core.
You look good, Campbell. They already got you whipped back into shape after your month off over Christmas,
Jerry said, stepping the rest of the way into the common room.
Thanks. What brings you to Lander? Nick asked.
Well, Miss Pipps couldn't be here herself, of course. You know how busy things get on the weekends. But she thought you might like at least one familiar face on Parents' Weekend,
Jerry explained.
That is surprising, Nick said.
He took a moment to recover himself, then turned to Vince.
This is Jerry. He works for Miss Pipps. He was my tutor growing up.
Nice to meet you, sir, Vince said politely, shaking his hand.
You too, kid, and that is some grip,
Jerry replied.
They making all you kids into ultra soldiers?
Just basic hero training, Vince said, an unwitting smile coming to his lips.
Yeah, well, with training like what they're giving you, I'm glad I'm not a criminal. 4 years of this and you'll be able to take on an army,
Jerry quipped. Maybe, but we'll all hope we never have to, Vince said.
Damn right, kid. So, Nick, you know any good burger joints around here?
A couple, Nick replied. But Jerry, Vince and I sort of made plans already.
Well then, Vince can come along,
Jerry said with a big grin. Vince took a step back and raised his hands.
No, I really couldn't. You two go enjoy yourselves. I'll call Alex up. His parents aren't coming in till tomorrow, so we can still have unsupervised fun.
You sure, kid? We got plenty of room in my car,
Jerry said.
Really, Vince, you're more than welcome, Nick reiterated.
Wouldn't dream of it, Vince said. You guys have fun. I'll see you when you get back.
Okay, if you're sure,
Nick said hesitantly. Vince nodded emphatically.
I guess that's that, then. Good to meet you, Vince,
Jerry said, stepping over to the door. He and Nick walked wordlessly up the hallway. Only after they had stepped outside, checked to make sure the door was secure, and done a visual sweep, did any words pass their lips.
Good kid,
Jerry commented.
He the one without any family?
Yep, Nick confirmed.
You know he was lying about the other friend, right? He's gonna sit there alone all night.
I know, Jerry. We invited him, though.
We could have pushed harder.
Nick shook his head. Wouldn't have done any good. I slipped up and let him see how glad I was to see you. Vince could have never infringed on our time after something like that. He wouldn't have budged, no matter how hard we pushed.
Huh. Quite a guy you befriended there.
Whatever you say. Ready to get some food? Nick asked.
Sure. My car is over that way,
Jerry said, pointing past a garish stretch limousine and a few people dressed to the nines standing around it. Crap, Nick said. Let's circle around. The blonde wearing black is another dorm mate of mine, and I'd really rather not get drawn into talking with her or her dad. Jerry let out a low whistle.
She's quite a looker. Which one is that, the flyer or the telepath?
Flyer, Nick replied.
Alice, then. And the guy with her is her dad. Any idea who the other girl is?
Not a clue about her name, but she's one of the few female juniors in the HCP, Nick replied. He had long ago compiled a mental list of every face he saw below ground, as well as what class they belonged in.
She must be some kind of powerful bitch,
Jerry observed.
Your friend looks pretty uncomfortable.
She's fine, Nick said, brushing it off. Let's go eat.
Campbell, if you think she's fine, we need to go back over how to read body language, and I mean now.
Fine, so she's miserable and trying to hide it, Nick replied. That's her problem. I'm off duty on the friend act.
Isn't this the girl who saved your life?
Jerry asked. Yeah, on the mountain. Why?
Heavens above, kid, what do you mean, why? The girl you owe your life to is practically biting back tears, and you want to sneak by so she can't see you.
Nick sighed. You know, for a con man, you sure have a strict moral code.
The key part of con man is the word man. You have to have empathy with your fellow human beings, or you're just a sociopath. And they make the shittiest con men alive,
Jerry pointed out. So what do you want me to do? Go slash the tires of the car so they can't go to dinner?
Interject yourself. Give her someone familiar she can lean on in the middle of a shitty situation,
Jerry said. How? I wouldn't do that. I mean, the me that they know wouldn't do that. Hell, he wouldn't even know how, Nick said. Jerry shrugged.
You got your license to work solo a long time ago. It's not my job to figure out the angle for you.
No, it's your job to tell me when to break my cover for no good reason, Nick snapped back.
Campbell, right now you'd be dead in the ground if not for that girl. There's your good reason. If you can't see how you owe her at least a little help when she's upset, then maybe basic human empathy is something you've already lost touch with,
Jerry said simply.
Damn it,
Nick cursed, taking off his sunglasses and handing them to Jerry. Give me those back tonight. Lunchy and Munchie's Burgers on 22 and V. 1 in the morning. And you are so buying after this shit.
Deal,
Jerry agreed, as he watched Nick stride off across the grass.
So that's why I'm holding myself in 7th place,
Beth said, concluding her story.
I could go higher, but right now, I just feel like those other 6 need the self-esteem from it more. I mean, I'm already so blessed, why be greedy?
A very kind gesture,
Mr. Adair said.
You're quite the caring girl.
Indeed,
Alice agreed. She wasn't gritting her teeth yet, but it was becoming an effort. It was strange. She'd been the good little daughter for so long without even trying. Yet after only a few months at Lander, living in this role felt like getting dental surgery without anesthetic. She didn't know what could have changed so much in such a short time. Had Alice been a touch more introspective, it might have occurred to her that the answer was herself. Perhaps she would have arrived there anyway, but at that particular moment, a considerable interruption to her thought process occurred. Alice felt an arm curl gently around the small of her back. At the same time, a hand cradled her chin and pulled it in close. A pair of lips landed lightly on her cheek before she was released from the silken net of the grip that had held her. She turned her head and found herself looking into a pair of brown, utterly foreign eyes. She was surprised, though not nearly as shocked as when she pulled back her gaze and saw the face that owned those eyes. "Sorry I'm late, darling," Nick said, giving her a comforting smile. "I got caught up at the study session for physics." Nick turned away from the stunned-into-silence Alice and faced her father. "You must be Mr. Adair. I must say it's an honor to finally meet you, sir. I'm Nicholas Campbell, Alice's boyfriend." 94.
"A pleasure,"
Mr. Adair said, his eyebrows lifting.
"Forgive my surprise. My daughter never mentioned that she had a suitor."
"Yes, we only recently decided to make things official, so there hasn't been much time to tell anyone," Nick said. "It took me quite a bit of work to show your daughter I was worth having."
"Good to hear. A man who won't put in the work is a man who won't stick around when things get hard,"
Mr. Adair said.
"I couldn't agree more, sir."
It was at this point that Alice's brain finally snapped back from the certainty that she was having a truly awful nightmare and sprang into action. After it entertained a few violent, murderous scenarios for how to deal with Nick, it decided to focus on a more plausible solution instead.
"Honey,"
Alice said, in a voice dripping with sweetness,
"can I speak with you for a minute?"
"Only if your father and his guest will excuse us,"
Nick said deferentially.
"By all means,"
Mr. Adair said.
Sure,"
Beth chimed in.
"So kind of you both,"
Nick said. He took Alice's arm in his and walked away from the car. When they were about 40 feet away, Alice turned to him with a huge smile on her face. From a distance, it was good camouflage, but if you were too close, the murder in her eyes gave away its falsehood.
"Any last words to your testicles before I separate them from your body?"
"Only together for a few minutes, and already you know I love the kinky stuff,"
Nick replied.
"Nick, what the fuck do you think you're doing?"
"Helping, believe it or not. You looked so helpless dealing with that bitch that I decided to jump in and help."
"I wasn't helpless."
"Fine. Miserable, then."
That one, Alice had a harder time disputing, so instead, she went after Nick's methods.
"How exactly does you being my boyfriend help?"
"I can be charming when I want to be. Besides, I thought it might just be nice to have a friend along. I mean, you've been looking forward to your dad coming since you found out. From the size of the car and the way that girl is dressed, I'm guessing it isn't the family affair you were expecting. I just figured if I were in your shoes, I'd rather have a friend around than face such a disappointment alone," Nick explained.
"That's surprisingly sweet intentioned,"
Alice said.
"You're not secretly the shape-shifting kid, are you?"
"Would the shape-shifting kid know you used to have a very well-justified fear of heights?" Nick asked.
"Touché,"
Alice said.
"I still don't know how comfortable I am with you pretending to be my boyfriend, though."
"Look, I've already made the play, and you went with it.
So now we're either together, or you get to explain how your friend took pity on you and pretended to be your beau to your father and that oh-so-lovely young woman.
Damn it. You've got a point.
Hence why I made it. Anyway, you got anything else? We need to wrap this up and walk back before it seems like we're up to something. Nick pointed out.
There is one little flaw in your plan. We're going to a business dinner, and you weren't invited. I appreciate the sentiment, but you won't be able to tag along once Beth's dad gets here.
Nick threw back his head and let out a genuine laugh. That's nothing to worry about.
Why not?
Trust me. I'll be there at your father's insistence. Just wait and see.
Okay, wow me, jerk.
Alice said, with a more sincere smile.
Oh, and one more thing. I like the way you look without your sunglasses.
Don't get used to it, Nick replied. But thanks.
Where is everyone?
Mr. Transport asked as he stepped into the living room and once again found Vince sitting by himself. Out with parents or parental figures? Vince said, mindlessly surfing through channels on the television.
Ah, I surmise Nick received a surprise visitor?
Yeah, a tutor that he's apparently pretty close to, Vince replied. He was really happy to see him, so they went to spend some time together.
You didn't tag along?
Mr. Transport asked. Nah, it's family. And I got the feeling Nick didn't get to see him much. I wouldn't have felt right intruding.
Very respectable. What will you do instead?
Nothing too exciting. I think I'll go grab dinner at the cafeteria and catch up on some homework, Vince said, standing from the couch and turning off the television.
I see,
Mr. Transport said. Those were productive, responsible activities. They were an excellent way to deal with loneliness or boredom. He should retreat now and leave Vince to his plans. He shouldn't get too involved, after all.
Vince, your comment about eating off-campus got me thinking about how long it's been since I dined out myself. I've got a craving for a delicious sandwich shop I know. Would you care to join me?
Mr. Transport asked. Vince looked wary. That's okay, Mr. Transport. Campus food is fine. Of course, the boy wouldn't want to accept pity. Mr. Transport tried to adjust his thinking. What would Mr. Numbers do in this situation? He wasn't entirely sure what the answer was, but the thought did lead him down the path to an excellent solution.
I understand, Mr. Transport said. It's just that Mr. Numbers is at a meeting, and I do hate eating in restaurants alone. I always feel somehow out of sorts, as if I don't belong as a solo diner. Silly, I know, yet the sentiment remains.
No, I get that, Vince said. I guess I can come along. Eating alone does kinda suck.
Much appreciated,
Mr. Transport said.
I'm ready whenever you are.
I've already got my shoes on, so I guess I'm ready to... Vince said, then noticed he was standing in the sunshine, white sand beneath his feet, and a crystal blue ocean before him. Go. 95.
How have things been since the holidays?
Mrs. Daniels asked. She and Herschel were sitting in an Italian restaurant a few miles off campus. It was a quaint place with fair prices, good food, and comfortable chairs.
Not too bad, Herschel replied. Roy's actually been working hard in the combat class.
Roy will tell me all about what he's been up to at length tomorrow, sweetie. I want to know how you've been doing. good, I guess. The classes aren't bad so far, and there's this river trip during spring break that looks like a lot of fun.
That's nice.
How about with girls? You talked a lot about your friend Mary over the break.
Mrs. Daniels pride.
Well, we did sort of dance a couple of weeks ago. A nice start. Then what happened?
Nothing. That was it. We danced a few weeks ago.
Herschel said, suddenly feeling a bit uncomfortable.
I see,
Mrs. Daniels said. She took a long sip of her white wine.
Darling, you know I don't want to intrude into this new life you've made for yourself, but would you be open to a little motherly advice?
Sure.
An object at rest will stay at rest. An object in motion will stay in motion, unless it is acted on by an opposing force. Time is a tremendously effective opposing force,
Mrs. Daniels said.
I'm not sure I follow you,
Herschel said.
Son, if you have momentum, then don't let time erode it too much. You danced with Mary, and from the smile when talking about it, you took it to have a romantic connotation. A girl expects a little continuation of courting after moments like those.
You're saying I should have asked her out?
I'm simply letting you know what a woman generally anticipates in the courting process,
Mrs. Daniels said with a soft smile.
Gotcha,
Herschel said. He thought about her advice for a moment.
One thing. Roy never really does that. I mean, he'll go for days without calling or even responding to the texts of girls he goes out with.
What your brother does isn't really courting. It's more... Well, I can't think of a polite word for it. Just trust me that I know more about nice girls like Mary than Roy does,
Mrs. Daniels said.
Breathtaking, isn't it?
Mr. Transport said, admiring the blue waves crashing against the sand.
Actually, yeah, it kind of is. Must be really far, though, given the fact that it looks like noon here and we left at dusk,
Vince pointed out.
Very astute. We are indeed some ways from home. Don't worry, though. I have no intention of leaving you for any type of trial this time,
Mr. Transport said.
Glad to hear it, Vince said, genuinely hoping Mr. Transport was telling the truth.
I'm sure. The sandwich shop is down the beach a bit. We can walk there in 20 minutes or so.
Sounds good, Vince said. Just curious, though. You're a teleporter. Why not teleport us right to it?
Because then we wouldn't get the experience of walking there,
Mr. Transport said. Vince cast his eyes out at the ocean once more. He had to admit, he could definitely see the appeal of taking the scenic route.
That was delicious,
Mrs. Daniels said, pushing away her plate.
I told you,
Herschel said.
This place is awesome. It was. You made an excellent choice, dear. After this, I'll sleep like a baby tonight.
You'll need it to keep up with Roy tomorrow,
Herschel said.
Of that, I have no doubt,
Mrs. Daniels agreed.
Speaking of, you boys worked out a schedule, right?
Yup. I'm here tonight and Sunday before you leave in the afternoon. Roy gets all of Saturday. It adds up to around a full day each,
Herschel explained.
Sounds very fair.
It is. Roy's actually been a lot more amiable lately,
Herschel said.
I think the training is giving him a place to take out a lot of his... energy.
Herschel narrowly avoided using the term anger. It seemed closer to bad-mouthing someone than making a report.
I'm happy to hear that. I hoped you boys would start getting along again eventually,
Mrs. Daniels said.
Most siblings are friendlier in their older years anyway. I was counting a lot on growing up to help that process.
Might not have been a bad bet.
Your mother has her moments,
Mrs. Daniels said,
and I know a thing or two about dealing with strong-willed boys.
You're right. This sandwich is ridiculously delicious,
Vince said, the cheese oozing down from his first bite and running along the plate.
I don't often hop across the globe for poor cuisine,
Mr. Transport said, tackling his own meal. Is going farther harder? Vince asked.
Not for me, Mr. Transport said, shrugging his shoulders. I've heard others say distance creates difficulty for them, but it's all the same to me. A mile or an ocean, I go there in a simple jump.
That's weird. I never really thought that people with the same power would function differently, Vince said.
It's a curiosity, I'll give you that,
Mr. Transport said.
All I've been able to figure out is that there's no such thing as the same power among supers. Vast amounts of similarities, but with subtle differences between them. For example, I once knew a large amount of fellow teleporters. One woman left a shower of sparks when she vanished. One man would appear in a large cloud of dark smoke. There was even a fellow who left the smell of sulfur in the air when he jumped. All the same power, in a very technical sense, yet each as unique as the super that wielded it.
I see what you mean. Sort of like how shifting is the most common ability, but everyone shifts into something different, Vince said.
And even those who shift into the same basic form have differences between them. Two people who can shift into panther-human hybrids would still look quite different and possess individual strengths and weaknesses.
So you're a teleporter who can go any distance with ease, Vince surmised. That doesn't mean that every teleporter can, though.
Precisely.
I guess that makes you one of the better ones, then, Vince said.
I'm okay, Mr. Transport lied. There's always someone better.
That last part wasn't a lie, even if Mr. Transport didn't know it. 96. Nick was charming. Alice had never expected that sort of thought to cross her mind, yet as she watched him schmooze the conversation, she had to admit the boy had his smoothness. It wasn't just that he was knowledgeable on every topic that came up, or that he had an impeccable sense of manners and propriety, or even his effortless likability. It was that he had all those things and understood how to control a conversation. Nick knew the art of not talking. He spoke infrequently, never interrupting, but only interjecting when a lull occurred. He splashed in a few words or a subtle idea, and then retreated. It was a series of quick, delicate strikes that gave off the impression of a young man with a competent head on his shoulders, who still properly respected his elders. Alice sipped her Merlot. She'd been allowed a single glass at dinner since she was a young child, pondering just how it was that someone like Nick could so effortlessly become this amazing guy. They were in a restaurant that catered to upscale clientele. As such, it was done in very dark, muted colors, lit by a soft glow of light that was just bright enough to see that one's food was properly cooked. It was a place that was easily missed, even by the locals, holding only a small placard on the door to indicate a restaurant was there. There were no prices on the menus, and there was ample dust on the bottles. Alice used to love places like this, and while a part of her was always overjoyed at the prospect of food prepared by expert chefs, she found the atmosphere to be a bit drab. Somewhere, amongst the gastrointestinal catastrophes that represented the dorm cafeterias, Alice had grown accustomed to a dining environment that was more lively.
"I must say, Nick,"
Mr. Vinders's voice blurted, breaking Alice's reverie,
"you were quite right about the 62 Merlot. I'd never ever heard of that winery before."
"Thank you, sir," Nick said, dipping his head ever so slightly in a gesture of humility. "It was just some knowledge I gleaned from an old teacher. It seems that particular regions of France experienced exceptional flooding about a year before, leaving it unable to grow or produce until 1962. When they finally did, they discovered that the rain had washed new minerals from a nearby village into the soil, leading to exceptional wine."
"That's quite useful knowledge,"
Mr. Adair said. "I'm glad I was able to share it with you," Nick said with a smile. He raised his glass and did a small toasting motion before treating himself to a sip.
"That's quite a young man you have there, Alice,"
Mr. Vinders said.
"I wish my Beth could meet one like him."
"Father!" Beth hissed. "I'm taking my time in choosing a worthwhile one."
"You've had 3 years. Alice pulled it off in only one semester,"
Mr. Vinders countered.
"I suppose Alice got the only good one,"
Beth said, spreading her mouth into a smile, while her eyes danced with rage at the happy couple.
"Keep trying. The sooner you get married, the sooner you can leave that school. You'll get yourself seriously hurt one of these days. I'd never have allowed you to attend Lander if I'd known they were letting women in the combat classes,"
Mr. Vinders said. Nick began to suspect the large, mustached man had drunk a little too much of the sumptuous Merlot. Fortunately, Mr. Adair was certain of that fact.
"I'm sure she'll meet a kind boy soon,"
Mr. Adair said.
"Be glad she's being choosy, though. After all, a man like you would surely reject 99% of the boys who would try to date a girl as lovely as your daughter."
"Quite true,"
Mr. Vinders agreed.
"Thus, it is both prudent and efficient for her to only bother bringing around the ones who truly have a chance at being worthy of her,"
Mr. Adair said.
"But I think that's enough about our daughter's love lives for the moment. Shall we get down to more immediate
matters?" "I've told you already, Charles. I'm not comfortable selling out my company unless I'm certain you won't go on a firing and outsourcing
spree," Mr. Vinders said, his face immediately growing
serious. "I assure you, the headcount will remain unchanged should your company find itself in my employ,"
Mr. Adair said. He reached out onto the table and plucked up a small, black menu.
"However, I find talks like these are best done between two gentlemen in solace, save for a good brandy. The immediate business I was referring to was dessert."
"Ha!"
Mr. Vinders let out a chuckle and slapped the table. In a fine dining restaurant, such a thing would have been unacceptable. In a place like this, acceptability was determined purely by whoever had the most money in the room.
"Right you are, Charles. Let's leave business for after we drop off the kiddies. At the moment, I'd rather do some serious damage to a good creme brulee."
Vince and Mr. Transport lounged in the straw chairs, resting their feet in the smooth currents of the ocean. "This beats the cafeteria," Vince said.
"This beats damn near everything," Mr. Transport said.
He took a long drink from the pink liquid in his clay cup. The punch was another specialty of the shop, and a feature that made this slice of paradise even more enjoyable.
"Yeah, I'll give you that one," Vince agreed. "I do love the water. Makes me wish I was looking forward to the river trip more."
"What's wrong with the river trip? I've heard it's a highlight of the freshman year at Lander."
"There's going to be a lot of drinking," Vince said. "I'm still figuring out how to be part of that whole scene when I don't want to join in."
"Just be," Mr. Transport said. "Contrary to what after-school specials will tell you, people who are drinking don't really care all that much if you're not. It translates to more beer for them anyway."
"Heh. I suppose that is a good point."
"Why the hang-up, though? I mean, most kids your age like to experiment a little."
"Most kids my age haven't spent their whole lives out of control," Vince pointed out. "I'm a little worried that anything that messes with my brain chemistry will send me right back to where I was."
"That's nothing to worry about. We told you, there's no chemical compound that can change you back. You're a super for life."
"Fear isn't often rational," Vince said. Mr. Transport took another sip of his drink, mulling over Vince's words. He then extended the cup to his silver-haired charge.
"Fear isn't rational, but facing it can be," he said. "Try a sip."
I'm underage."
"Actually, in this part of the world, there is no legal drinking age. So, no, you aren't," Mr. Transport said. "Aside from which, we're surrounded by a small population, and you've probably only got a little bit of energy stored up. I can easily teleport you somewhere deserted if you start blasting fire at the trees. There is literally no situation I can think of where it's safer for you to take a sip of alcohol."
"But why take the chance?"
"Because hopefully you'll have a long life ahead of you, and in it there will be tons of things that might take away control. I'm not saying to get shit-faced or become a drug addict. I'm just saying that I'd rather not see a kid like you spend his life always afraid that fun will automatically be punished by a return to a shittier point in life,"
Mr. Transport said. Vince tentatively reached over and accepted the cup, then took a short sip. He handed it back to Mr. Transport, who took a much larger one.
"That was actually pretty good," Vince admitted.
"Yeah," Mr. Transport agreed. "Feeling like you're about to blast the shit out of something accidentally?"
"Not yet," Vince said, settling back in his seat. "I think we better relax by the ocean for a bit longer, though, just in case."
"Good idea."
"Charles, do you mind if we borrow the limo for a bit so I can drop my daughter off and say goodbye?"
Mr. Vinders asked as they pulled up to the parking lot nearest Melbrook.
"Not at all,"
Mr. Adair said.
"It will give me a chance to say goodnight to Alice as well. Swing back by when you are done."
"Of course,"
Mr. Vinders agreed. Mr. Adair, Alice, and Nick all departed from the limousine. It puttered off slowly across campus, aimed at a different housing area.
"So good to see you again, dear,"
Mr. Adair said, hugging Alice lightly.
"You too, Daddy. Feel free to come visit again,"
I will keep it in mind,
Mr. Adair said with a smile.
If it isn't too much trouble,